It's 1 o'clock, having arrived. I'm going to call this April 5th, 2022 meeting of the House Taxes Committee to order under Rules 10.01, and also inform the public that if you'd like to find information on this meeting, please go to the website, Minnesota House of Representatives, go to Committees and Divisions, go to Taxes, and on that homepage down to the lower right, you will find all of that information. With that, Ms. Griska, would you please take the roll?
Representative Marquardt.
Marquardt present.
Representative Marquardt present. Representative Lislegard.
Lislegard present.
Representative Lislegard present. Representative Davids.
Davids present.
Representative Davids present. Representative Agbaje.
Present.
Representative Agbaje present. Representative Carlson.
Carlson is present.
Representative Carlson present. Representative Detmer.
Detmer present.
Representative Detmer present. Representative Garofalo.
Garofalo present.
Representative Garofalo present. Representative Gomez.
Gomez present.
Representative Gomez present. Representative Herr.
Present.
Representative Herr present. Representative Hertas.
Hertas present.
Representative Hertas present. Representative Howard.
Howard present.
Representative Howard present. Representative McDonald.
McDonald present.
Representative McDonald present. Representative Miller.
Miller present.
Representative Miller present. Representative Moran. Representative Moran.
Present.
Representative Moran present. Representative Mortensen.
Present.
Representative Mortensen present. Representative Robbins.
Present.
Representative Robbins present. Representative Sandell.
Sandell present.
Representative Sandell present. Representative Schultz.
Schultz present.
Representative Schultz present. Representative Stevenson.
Present.
Representative Stevenson present. Representative Swazinski. Representative Swazinski. Representative Joachim.
Present.
Representative Joachim present. We have a quorum.
Thank you very much, Ms. Griska. Representative McDonald, would you like to move to approve the April 1st, 2022 minutes?
Well, if you insist, Mr. Chair, I so move.
Thank you very much. Representative McDonald moves approval of the April 1st, 2022 minutes. Members, any questions or thoughts? If not, I'm going to ask you to temporarily unmute yourselves. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say nay. The motion does prevail. The April 1st, 2022 minutes are approved. So, well, thank you very much, members. So today we are going to go over House File 3669 with the A22-0407 DE amendment that will be added on Thursday. So here's how the process will work, is that we're not going to take any motions today. We're going to do a walkthrough on the bill. Both the summary and then also the spreadsheet on the finances. And then tomorrow we'll hear testimony on the bill. And then on Thursday, we'll mark it up. So on Thursday, I would move House File 3669. We would then add the DE1 amendment. There will be an author's amendment that will then be added. And then at that point, entertain any other amendments. And just a thought on amendments, as you know, in the past, and is the tradition of this stellar taxes committee, there are no deadlines on amendments. I just ask all members to get those in soon enough so that we can get them posted prior to the meeting for the public, and also with the thought of keeping the time of our staff in mind. Now, one thing, as we've done in the past, which is I would encourage, is that if you have a bill that you would like to have offered as an amendment or even part of that bill, you can just offer the bill. And then we would, if it is adopted, we would fix it so that it would then work into the bill. So you don't have to go to staff with anything. You can just present the bill, House File 1287 or whatever that might be. But of course, make sure you get that so we can get that posted. I think so. Then we'll start with then the summary and so forth. So before we begin, I just want to give a huge thank you to staff, both partisan and nonpartisan staff, for all of your work in putting this together. And it's not just in the last few days, but over the course of this session, that it's just so very, very important. Include the revisor's office also. I'd like to thank Chair Joachim and the Property Tax Division and Lead Representative Hertas for their excellent work and their very big contribution to this bill. Big thank you to Lee Davids for your work, your cooperation, and your guidance through all of this. I really appreciate that. And the entire committee for your work. And as we heard bills, I think you'll notice in this tax bill, there's nothing in the tax bill that I heard kind of widespread objections on. I don't think you'll find anything in the bill that has that. I think you're going to find that things we've talked about, it meets that criteria. And it certainly is a bipartisan bill. I think there's at least almost about 20 GOP provisions in the bill, which I think is very important. So, as we tried to meet the goals of the committee, we tried to put as much as we could do that. And as we talked about the goals of the committee, one of the big ones was to really see how could we really make a difference in people's lives? How can we actually move that dial in what we did that would really make a difference and improving quality of life for our families, our workers, our senior citizens? We also talked a lot about still the recovery and the rebuilding from COVID-19, how we can address the workforce shortage. And I think what you're going to find out in this bill is that all of those goals were really met. So I want to talk about summarize some of the top things that I think are in this bill that addresses that. And then I'm going to turn it over to Representative Joachim. But when you look at for families, we've got the Great Start Child Care Credit, which ups that credit to $3,000 per child up to a max of $7,500. We know child care costs are huge. And that's going to get out to about 186,000 families. And kind of to put that in perspective, if you're a family of four and you've got one child, it's Great Start Credit goes from child from birth to 4 years of age. That's where this credit applies. So if you're a family of four with one child that falls in that age range, your first $88,000 of income is tax-free. And if you're a family of four and you have two children, and I was just at an event who was a family that had two children under the age of five, your first $132,000 of income would be tax-free. That's how significant that really is. Another part is the student loan credit, which each spouse can qualify up to $1,400. Chair Davids had initiated the student loan credit back in 2017. We're moving that credit maximum from $500 to $1,400. Again, being very significant and getting out to about 43,000 filers. And then also just pertaining just specifically to families, again, is we have a one-time credit rebate, a child tax credit rebate, that would be $325 for each dependent under 17. So you can see the real focus here on families and young families and making a difference. I also wanted to say before I went on that, as you saw the cost and total of cuts and aids in the first biennium is $1.65 billion, and in 24-25 it's $1.6 billion. For senior citizens, what we are doing there is we're saying for Social Security benefits, as a married joint filer, if your income is $75,000 or less, won't pay anything in Social Security taxes. If you're single, that'd be about $59,000 or less. And the idea is not only to provide some significant tax relief, this provision alone would get out to about a quarter of a million seniors at an average reduction of about $470, but it helps really simplify the system. You'll kind of know right now that if my income's 75 or below, I'm not paying into that tax. But we also help seniors on top of that with maintaining their independence and making sure they got quality healthcare into the future. And we do that with what Cherry O'Joaquin will talk about, some significant property tax cuts. Huge investment into housing. We have the county aid for housing of $40 million a year. That's really going to help counties look at localized needs, whether that might be workforce or affordable housing, whatever that might be. That's going to be huge. There's a workforce housing account of $10 million a year. So keeping housing more affordable is important. COVID-19, how do we deal with that? If you had unemployment insurance, we're providing the same $10,200 subtraction as we did last year. That's going to get out to 267,000 filers at about $603 a piece. We have the small business grant of $50 million. We also, on all the grants and kind of forgiven loans that our businesses have received from the state or counties since the pandemic started, all these grants have gone out. Well, they're all taxable. Now, people don't think about that. I've heard from some businesses that's taxable. We have made that now a subtraction. So those grants and so forth will not be taxed to our businesses. And we also have $25 million into renters assistance, which I think is going to be very crucial as we transition out of COVID. Dealing with the workforce shortage, we've got these credits to young families and young workers helping retain but also attract. We have that Community Career Workforce Academy. And then some of the other things we have, we're doing federal conformity. On the local sales tax, that we general rebate on construction, we're doing that for 2 years and hoping maybe later on in conference we can extend that permanently, but we're doing that just for 2 years. We do the PTE SALT workaround. We are helping folks that dealt with increased rate costs on polar vortex. So those are not a lot of items. And, on the House floor, I'll mention authors and so forth more. But there are things from, this committee, members on this committee that were instrumental. And again, our focus really was how can we make a difference in people's lives? And we think we've done it with this. And so now I'm going to turn it over to Cherry O'Joaquin for a few moments to talk about what they did in the division report, which was actually the biggest property tax cut in over 20 years. Cherry O'Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, as Chair Marquardt said, the property tax division reports included in the tax bill. And the property tax sections of the road tax bill reflect the work that the division and its members completed over the last 8 weeks. And they were instrumental in putting this together. One of the major tasks that we have in property tax division is to make sure that our property tax system has a sense of fairness and equity. And we really do that with this package of bills. That the package of bills includes increased funds to the property tax refund program, adjustments in the homestead exclusions, increases to the targeted property tax credit, transformational change in the renter's credit, and increasing accessibility to the senior deferral program. With this package, we provide homeowners and renters with money to offset a portion of their local property taxes. The renter's credit in particular, I'll talk in a little bit about, but property taxes really are rising. I know you've all heard from your constituents, they're rising due to increased market values and ever-changing needs of our local governments. Through local government and county program aid, we send assistance to our cities and counties so that they can provide the needed services to their communities. As a division, we also support our school districts with levy equalization for those communities that have lower property tax values, once again, giving people property tax cuts. The division also includes tax increment financing flexibility to our cities, has provisions that address local option sales tax and lodging tax for our cities and counties. So to just touch on a few highlights, the largest investment, nearly two-thirds of our budget, goes to transformational change in the renter's credit. We move the income calculation from the household income to AGI, as well as moving the program from August on a form to the income tax forms in April so people can get their money right away. We also provide a large investment in equalizing the local optional revenue for school districts across the state. As I noted, there are a variety of other ways we provide property tax credits across the state in a package of bills that you can see on this spreadsheet. You also have runs in your, should have runs in your packet about the school equalization, the county program aid, and what we do with the local government aid, which is the next update I want to give you. We do update the local government aid formula. That includes over a 5% increase in funds. Over the years, the LGA program evolved to what we have today. We have had, and what we've had for about the last 35 years, a program to provide state aid to property poor municipalities so that they can provide basic services. Services like city streets, sewer, clean water, and public safety. The aid is provided by a need-based formula that has also evolved over the years. In fact, about every 10 years, the formula needs to be adjusted to reflect current market value and the changing needs of our cities. I would really like to thank the stakeholders from all of our city groups across the state that helped with this needed formula fix, and also our nonpartisan staff that went through about 40 different regression models to find the right formula to really calculate need. We also provide an increase in county program aid in the division report. And as I said, there's spreadsheets in your packets so that you can see how this new bill would affect your cities and counties. But bottom line is, the numbers don't ever tell us the full story. Behind each one of those numbers on the spreadsheet are people, people across the state and all of our communities. And I'm sure you've heard from some of those folks who just received their property tax market value forms in the mail telling us what we might be paying next year and the increase in market value in the mail, and or they might have just seen their rent jump. They may be young professionals just starting out in the workforce, or a family who's trying to make ends meet with rising childcare costs or school loans. It may be someone who's trying to downsize and facing a really crazy housing market, or a senior just trying to age in place. But the investments we make in the property tax division report and this tax bill reach people in every corner of the state and provide Minnesotans with much needed assistance. These investments provide ongoing permanent tax cuts to Minnesota, property tax cuts to Minnesotans in every one of our communities, and puts money back in their pockets when they really need it the most. But more importantly, behind each one of those numbers on the spreadsheet are people, people that we've been here, sent here to serve, and members. It's a good bill. Just if you have any questions, you can ask me afterwards about what's all in there. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chair Joaquim. So at this point, I would like to begin the walkthrough of House File 3669, and actually the walkthrough is including the DE1 amendment. And what I'd like to ask members is, ask after each article, we will stop. And if you have questions on the bill at that point, we'll entertain those questions after each article. So with that, it looks like, Representative Swazinski is now here also. So Article 1, Mr. Williams.
Chair Marquardt and members, Article 1 is the federal conformity article. Most of the sections in the article are updating the date references for definitions of the Internal Revenue Code. I'm not going to walk through those on an individual section by section basis, but I will point out a few instances where we're making other changes in this article. Section 5 and 8 is an addition for the amount of a business meals deduction in excess of 50% of the cost of business meals. This is essentially providing nonconformity to a change that was enacted federally, allowing 100% deduction for business meals. Section 6 of Article 1 pertains to net operating losses for individual taxpayers. The bill is not conforming retroactively to the CARES Act changes to net operating losses that allowed businesses to carry back those net operating losses to previous tax years. Instead, it's allowing a effectively a catch-up subtraction in tax year 2022 or later, through which individual taxpayers can take those net operating losses deductions and then carry forward any unused amounts in 2022. Similarly, Section 7 and 9 pertain to the business interest deduction provisions in the CARES Act. Again, the bill is not allowing the increases in the business limitation deduction under the CARES Act retroactively. Instead, it's allowing businesses to take a interest deduction for the amounts allowed under CARES that the bill is not providing in older or previous tax years, as instead allowing businesses to take the interest deduction in tax year 2022 and then carry forward any unused amounts. Other than that, I wanted to mention Section 13 of the bill. This sort of describes how the Article 1 attempts to administer conformity. This imposes a special limited adjustment that equals the difference in tax under the bill as compared to the amount required under current law. Essentially, this special limited adjustment wipes out any retroactive effects for tax years 2021 and earlier. There are a few exceptions in the bill language. I point you to them on 12.32 to 13.13 of the bill. These are the sections of the bill that are allowed retroactively. So the provisions that the bill is allowing retroactively are the provisions that were adopted previously under last year's conformity article, the exclusion of gross income for the discharge of qualified principal residence indebtedness, special rules for disaster aid casualty losses, the treatment of certain loan forgiveness relating to the shuttered venue grants and Treasury Program Management Authority grants, the treatment of EIDL advances, targeted EIDL advances under ARPA, the treatment of restaurant revitalization grants under ARPA, and certain exclusion from gross income for student loan forgiveness under ARPA. So those provisions are conformed to fully retroactively, and taxpayers would be able to claim them immediately by filing an amended return. All of the other provisions in the bill that are being conformed to are being conformed to through this catch-up provision. And that brings us to Section 16, which is the addition and subtraction the catch-up. This is the same approach that the governor is providing, where instead of conforming retroactively on these provisions, taxpayers would sort of take a subtraction in tax year 2022 for any provisions that apply to tax years prior to 2022. That's sort of a high-level description of Article 1, the conformity article, and I'm happy to answer any questions that members have.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. So just to kind of clarify, so there would be this catch-up provision that filers would take care of when they file in 2023 for their 22 property taxes, except those, seven or eight provisions that you listed, where they would be able to, an amended return, and then they would get that rebate right away rather than having to wait till the end of the year. Is that correct?
Chair Markworth and members, that's correct. In some cases, I'm not sure, and the Department of Revenue may be able to weigh in on which provisions they can adjust administratively based on the fact that they may have information on things that taxpayers added back when they filed their returns. So there may be some cases where the Department of Revenue could just automatically adjust those returns. Gotcha. And there may be some cases where taxpayers would have to file an amended return. And it would sort of vary from provision to provision and taxpayer to taxpayer.
Very good. And they will be here on Thursday too, for sure. So thank you. Any other questions on Article 1, which is the federal conformity? I don't see any, so let's move to Article 2. Mr. Williams, Mr. Clayman.
Chair Markworth and members, Article 2 is the individual income and corporate franchise tax article. I'm going to walk through the first half of this article and then hand it off to my colleague, Mr. Clayman. Sections 1 to 3 of this article pertain to the beginning farmer credit. We're making sort of a number of changes simultaneously. So the first is allowing single member LLCs to qualify for the beginning farmer credits. There's actually two credits in state law. Second, there's this a provision that was carried in our omnibus bill last year and also heard in committee last year relating to sales to family members for the agricultural assets credit. So that language is unchanged from the version that was heard in committee last year in our omnibus bill. There's also language that's sort of reducing the credit allocation amounts by about $300,000 for 2 years, and then appropriating an equivalent amount to the Rural Finance Authority to develop an online application system. And finally, there's new language that's requiring outreach to socially disadvantaged farmers and ranchers. So you may remember the bill last year provided a different credit rate for socially disadvantaged farmers and ranchers, and this language instead it requires the Rural Finance Authority to do outreach and to promote the availability of the credit among socially disadvantaged farmers and ranchers. Section 4 pertains to the Angel Credit. It's a $5 million 1 year increase in the Angel Credit allocation. Sections 5 and 6 pertain to the Film Credit. So this bill, those provisions would essentially allow a credit to be claimed for productions that take place in two consecutive 12-month period rather than a single taxable year. So if a production rolled over sort of the taxable year line, they can still grant the credit. Section 7 and 8 pertain to the pass-through entity tax, the SALT cap workaround that was enacted last year. Mr. Klayman will cover those changes when he takes over. Section 9, this is a provision that was from the Great Start Child Care Credit Bill that Representative Cortese Watoon offered in committee and continued in this bill. It's an addition for dependent care flex spending accounts. The addition is essentially for taxpayers that participate in a dependent care flex spending account but are instead opting to claim the state credit because it's generally more generous than those flex spending accounts would be. Section 11 is the military retirement subtraction. This is covering individuals who sort of rolled a military pension into a civilian pension that no longer qualify for the military retirement subtraction. We heard that bill in committee a couple of weeks ago. Section 11 is the Social Security subtraction. The treatment in this section is to allow a full 100% Social Security subtraction for married joint taxpayers with a adjusted gross incomes of $75,000 or less. So any federally taxable Social Security benefits would be allowed under the subtraction and would not be taxable for Minnesota purposes. The threshold is $58,600 for other tax filers. The bill actually preserves the ability for some filers to claim the subtraction that's allowed under current law, because there's a few taxpayers that would be worse off under the formula of this bill. So it's essentially allowing them to continue to claim the subtraction under current law, so there's no increase for those filers. Section 12 is the subtraction for the emergency assistance for post-secondary student grants. This is the emergency financial assistance provided to some students, so that assistance would not be taxable under the bill. Section 13 is the Workforce Incentive Fund grants. This is a proposal from Representative Schultz's bill that we heard last week to provide sort of grants for individuals working in care of elderly adults and disabled adults. This is to make those grant funds non-taxable. Section 14, it pertains to the credit for taxes paid to another state. It would permit a single member LLC to claim the credit for taxes paid to another state. Section 15 is that Great Start Child Care Credit is a modification of our existing dependent care credit. The main changes in that section are it increases the credit rate, the maximum credit rate, to 50% in under current law. The maximum credit rate is 35%. It also increases the phase-out threshold to $150,000. There's sort of a two-tier phase-out at $150,000 and then again at $400,000. The maximum credit has been scaled down somewhat from the version that we heard in committee when Representative Cortese Watoon heard the bill. Let me pull up that section really quick. So the maximum eligible expenses under current law are $3,000 for taxpayers with one dependent and $6,000 for taxpayers with two or more. The bill would provide an increase in those limitations for taxpayers that have a qualifying one or more qualifying dependents that are age 0 to 4. So the expense limitation would be $10,000 for taxpayers with one child ages 0 to 4, which at a 50% credit rate would get 5,000. Oh, I I think those are the old numbers, but the new amounts would be $6,000 of eligible expenses for a $3,000 credit for taxpayers with one dependent, and then $12,000 of eligible expenses, so a $12,000 credit for taxpayers with two or more children, 0 to 4. Section 16 of the bill is the working family credit. This is for taxpayers that have an file with an individual taxpayer identification number. They're currently disallowed from claiming the federal earned income credit and the bill, and that prevents them from also qualifying for the state working family credit. So the bill would sort of exempt them from that federal restriction and allow them to continue to claim the state working family credit, which is not allowed under current law. Section 17 pertains to the state education credit or K-12 credit. There's sort of three changes in that section. The phase-out threshold for the credit is increased to $70,000 of adjusted gross income. The phase-out threshold under current law is not indexed for inflation, so this would add inflation indexing to that section. And finally, the income measure used to phase out the credit is changed from household income to adjusted gross income. And from there, I'm going to hand it off to my colleague, Mr. Clayman.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. Mr. Clayman.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm going to continue with the Article 2 summary. Quick correction on the angel credit number. It's currently at $5 million for 2022, and the bill would increase it by $7 million to $12 million. Then going to Section 7 and 8, these are the PTE tax provisions, and these are the provisions that allow 100% of a resident's partner's income to be allocated to the state for purposes of determining the amount of PTE tax, and would also allow the tiered partnerships to be able to elect and file to file and pay the PTE tax. Sections 18 through 21 and Section 27 all relate to the historic structure credit that was heard in this committee that allow the credit to be taken in one lump sum in the year the property is placed in service. This would also apply to projects that have been certified through an allocation certificate but have not yet place the property into service, and so those provisions also include some administrative rules to determine how that works. Sections 22 and 23 are the student loan credit provisions. The first would make the credit refundable, and the second would increase the maximum credit temporarily to $1,400. Section 24 and 25 relate to the credit for stillbirths. That was heard in this committee last year and was in the House Omnibus Tax Bill last year that provides clarifying changes and administrative changes, including changes to a number of definitions, one of which would allow an individual that did not give birth but that is listed on the birth certificate to claim the credit, and that could apply in situations where you have arrangements for surrogacy. Section 26, that just excludes the workforce training grants from the property tax refund program's definition of income. Section 28 provides a temporary subtraction for unemployment insurance benefits up to $10,200. Section 29, that's the new provision that allows a $325 refundable income tax credit for parents of children 16 and under, and the Department of Revenue would be required to automatically adjust returns and send out the refunds under that provision. And finally, Mr. Chair and members, Section 30 just repeals the definition for household income under the education credit because that's switched to adjusted gross income. And Mr. Chair, that concludes Article 2.
Thank you, Mr. Clayman. Members, any questions on Article 2? All right, I don't see any. We're going to move to Article 3 in the bill. Mr. Clayman.
Mr. Chair and members, Article 3 is the sales and use tax article. I'm going to divide the walkthrough up into two different parts. The second part will be all the construction exemptions, and then the first part will be the other modifications to the general sales and use tax. So sections 1 through 7 Section 10 and Section 16 through 18. They all modify, extend, or provide exemptions for the following bills that were heard in committee. In those sections, you'll find the county fair pre-sales exemption, the exemption for the National Sports Center in Blaine, and also the dedication to the amateur sports account to promote amateur sports. There are two provisions that relate to the farm fencing material exemption. These sections also include the occasional sales exemption for single member LLCs, where there's a transfer between the sole member of the LLC and the LLC itself. Those sections also include the exemption for fiber and conduit purchased by broadband providers and ISPs, including the refunds for the retroactive portion of that bill. In addition, there's a capital equipment exemption for prepared food and beverages, which would apply to restaurants. This bill was heard last year, and so this is the same bill that was heard last year, at least as it was amended through through the year last year. Lastly, then there's the sunset date extension for the Minnesota State High School League sales tax exemption. And then sections 8, 9, 11 through 15, and 19 through 27. These all relate to various construction exemptions. The first one I'll note is the Mazeppa fire expiration date exemption for their construction materials to rebuild after the fire. There's also the general exemption that was is similar to the governor's approach in the governor's bill that Chair Marquardt mentioned earlier. That applies to governments, nonprofits, and other entities. Again, this is temporarily limited, so it's a two-year window. It's 8 years of the exemption and then 18 months for the exemption and then 6 months to claim the refunds for those exemptions. These sections also include a separate exemption for Minneapolis-St. Paul airport projects, and those are limited in the same way as they would be for the general exemption. And then the bill also includes a number of specific projects. And these were bills that were all heard in committee. And these special exemptions, the general limitations under the general exemption for governments, nonprofits, and other entities. So this would be the 18-month window for the exemption and the 6-month refund provision. Those provisions would not apply to any of the following special exemptions that are also in the bill. And so these special exemptions include the local government facilities exemptions for Itasca County Courts, Maple Grove, and Wayzata, and also for the following schools, of Chisholm, Duluth, Nashua, Keewatin, Ely, Hibbing, Rockridge, Northland Learning Center, and Northern Lights Academy. And Mr. Chair, that concludes Article 3.
Thank you very much, Mr. Clayman. Are there any questions on Article 3, sales and use taxes? Not seeing any, I will move to, Representative McDonald.
Yeah, sorry, Mr. Chair. Wanted to recap, Mr. Clayman, did you mention that sales and use tax for a restaurant equipment, right? Is that for producing food at a restaurant? Is that provision that you were speaking about?
Mr. Clayman?
Mr. Chair and Representative McDonald, yes, that's correct. This would be a capital equipment exemption for equipment that is used in producing prepared food and beverages. And yes, that's in the bill.
Representative McDonald, that was Representative Baker's bill that we heard last year, and then we kind of heard one this year also.
Oh, great. Good. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I had that bill 4 years ago, so it's glad to see that it's getting back in the bill, and hopefully we can get it passed this year.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anything else on Article 3? All right. We will move to Article 4, property taxes. Mr. Swanson.
Mr. Chair and members, Jared Swanson with House Research. I'll be walking through Article 4, the property tax article, next. So there were four provisions added to this article that were not in the division report when it passed out of the property tax division last week. Each of these items was heard in the full tax committee, and I will note these items as I go over them. So sections 1 and 3, I guess before I begin, in the summary, Article 4 begins on page 19, and in the actual bill language, Article 4 starts on page 74. So Articles 1 and 3 of the property tax article allow joint powers districts to allocate long-term facilities maintenance costs back to their member districts and include facility lease expenses in each member district's lease levy authority in the same manner as other school districts do. Section 2 sets the first-tier local optional revenue equalization factor to 170% of the statewide average tax base per pupil. Section 4 of the property tax article provides a 50% reduction in net tax capacity for certain property at the Duluth Airport. And then sections 5 through 8 of this article either create or amend property tax exemptions for solar energy generating systems, property in Minneapolis owned by the Minnesota Chippewa tribe, an elderly living facility in Duluth, and energy storage systems. Section 9 is a provision that was not in the division report, and this is a provision that creates or exempts certain community solar gardens from the solar energy production tax. Sections 10, 11, 20, and 35 create a single classification for manufactured home parks and sets the classification rate for manufactured home parks and certain community land trusts at 0.75%. Sections 12 through 18 and section 23 are another provision that was not in the division report. And these sections would allow property owners to qualify for homestead by providing an individual taxpayer identification number, or ITIN. Section 19 allows land on which hemp is grown to qualify for the ag classification. Section 21 changes the disabled veterans exclusion application window for spouses of veterans who died due to a service-connected cause and spouses of veterans who would have been eligible for the 100% total and permanent disability exclusion. This section also allows surviving spouses to reapply for the exclusion if they had been receiving the exclusion and it expired before the legislature removed the 8-year limit on the spousal benefit. Section 22 of Article 4 increases the value thresholds for the homestead market value exclusion. Section 24 increases the school building bond agricultural credit to 85%. Section 25 is another provision that was not in the division report, and this provision would clarify that attachments and appurtenances to distribution line property owned by utility cooperatives include metering equipment, streetlights, and other infrastructure that's connected to the co-op's distribution system. Sections 26 and 27 remove the 10% minimum interest rate on delinquent property taxes. Sections 29 through 32 increase the household income limit to $96,000 for the senior citizens property tax deferral program. These sections also reduce the minimum occupancy requirement from 15 years down to 5 years. And finally, sections 33 and 34 contain another provision that was not in the division report. And these provisions would request the legislative auditor to conduct a review of costs to counties for the provision of child protective services. And Mr. Chair, that concludes Article 4.
Very good, Representative Swanson. I do want to clarify that Mr. Swanson mentioned sections 12 through 18 were not in the division report. It will be added under the DE1 amendment, and that also was heard in the governor's tax bill, when we heard the governor's tax bill, those provisions. Any questions on Article 4? All right, we will move to Article 5, state aids. Mr. Swanson.
Mr. Chair and members, moving on to Article 5, which was another article that was contained in the division report. There were three provisions added to this article that were not included in the division report as it passed out of the property tax division. But again, each of these provisions was heard in the full tax committee, and I will note them as I as I go over those sections. So article starts on, Article 5 starts on page 25 of the summary and page 122 of the actual DE amendment or the bill language. So sections 1 through 9, 15, 18, and 23 all contain the LGA reform provisions. So these sections update the need factors in the LGA formula and increase the annual LGA appropriation by about $34.2 million annually. Section 10 of Article 5 increases the county program aid appropriation by $13 million annually. Sections 11, 12, 13, and 20 contain a PILT provision that was not in the division report, but was heard in the full tax committee. And these provisions increase PILT payments for other natural resources land and make other changes related to the PILT program. Section 14 of Article 5 establishes a new state aid for soil and water conservation districts, which would distribute $22 million annually. Section 16 is another provision that was not in the division report, but was heard in full tax committee, and this would establish the local affordable housing aid to counties and cities, and this would distribute $40 million annually. Section 17 and 24 replace the current local performance measurement program with the stronger community aid program. Section 19 of Article 5 is another provision that was not in the division report, and this would establish a one-time appropriation of $40 million for grants to counties to either establish or support a community career workforce academy. And lastly, sections 21 and 22 of Article 5 provide aid penalty forgiveness to the cities of Echo and Wharton. And Mr. Chair, that concludes the state aids article.
Thank you very much, Mr. Swanson. Any questions on Article 5? Seeing none, we will move to Article 6. Mr. Culp.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'll be speaking very briefly on Article 6 since it was included in its entirety in the Property Tax Division report. Article 6 contains the tax increment financing or TIF provisions from the division report, including changes suggested by the Office of the State Auditor to general tax increment financing law, such as technical and policy changes to the law governing TIF administrative expenses, pooling and violations of TIF law. Article 6 also gives special TIF authority to the cities of Fridley, Hopkins, Plymouth, Savage, and Woodbury. And that's it for Article 6.
Thank you very much. Any questions on Article 6 for Mr. Culp? All right. We will move to the next article, Article 7, local taxes. Mr. Culp.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Similarly, I'll be giving a short shrift to this since it was included in its entirety in the division report. Article 7 contains the local tax provisions from the Property Tax Division report, including changes to the general local sales tax law, such as the nexus requirement for resolutions. Article 7 also contains the local lodging tax provisions for Cook County, Plymouth, and Woodbury, as well as the local sales tax provisions for Rochester, Marshall, Edina, Grand Rapids, Aiken, Black Duck, Bloomington, Brooklyn Center, East Grand Forks, Golden Valley, Henderson, Proctor, Rice County, Roseville, and Winona County. And that concludes the overview of Article 7.
Thank you very much, Mr. Culp. And if anyone has any specific questions, we went over each city very specifically, but if any members have questions on any specific cities, project, or whatever, I'm sure Chair Joachim would be willing to answer any questions, or staff also, as far as what exactly was done there, but it's also in the summary. All right, any questions on Article 7? I don't see any, so we're going to move to Article 8. And that is Mr. Williams, Article 8, Renter's Tax Credit.
Chair Markward and members, Article 8 is the Renter's Tax Credit section, or article. The language in this article, it's essentially converting the state renter's credit into a refundable income tax credit. Much of the policy and administration of the credit will remain the same, except for taxpayers would file it as part of their individual income tax return rather than as a separate standalone form in the August or late summer. You know, there's one provision in this article that essentially requires the Department of Revenue to develop a simplified filing process so that taxpayers who don't have an individual income tax liability can file and claim the credit. But other than that, much of the language is sort of just shifted over from Chapter 290A into Chapter 290. If you look at the bill summary, there's actually a table that sort of shows you where the new language being coded in Chapter 290 came from in Chapter 290A. This is unchanged from the division report language, except for the amendment we adopted in division. So I'm not going to discuss it in any more detail unless members have further questions.
Members, any questions on the renter's tax credit? All right, Article 9, Mr. Cope, Public Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Article 9 contains provisions relating to the debt financing of political subdivisions. State law allows cities, counties, towns, and school districts to issue notes, certificates of indebtedness, and general obligation certificates for certain purchases, but it currently requires that those debts be payable within 10 years. This article would extend the time period during which those obligations must be payable from 10 to 20 years.
Thank you very much. Any questions on Article 9? All right. Article 10, Mr. Clayman, Mr. Colt, Mr. Williams, miscellaneous taxes.
Mr. Chair and members, Article 10 is the miscellaneous section, so there will be a few of us from House Research who will go through those provisions. I'm going to cover sections 1 through 14 in the miscellaneous article. Section 1, 4 through 6, 10, 11, and 26. These are all related to what the legislature enacted last year for June Accelerated. And the general system is that, and this would apply to the mortgage and deed tax, the cigarette and tobacco excise tax, and the liquor excise tax. Last year, the provision applied to June Accelerated sales tax liability. And what those sections do is they say that for a November forecast, if there's a positive unrestricted balance in the general fund, the percentage of June accelerated liability for these excise taxes would be reduced based on what that surplus is until it reaches zero. And then there's an additional aid payment provision that's included in this too, and it would work in a similar way. So the July 20 aid payment, the percentage that's paid in July would be reduced, again, based on the surplus and shifted then to March 15th, so the earlier date. So that's what those sections do. Section 2 is a revenue recapture provision that just prohibits certain hospital debt from being recovered through the revenue recapture system. Section 3, this was a subject that was discussed in the taxes committee. It's a new provision that clarifies that the sunset date requirements under Section 3.192 for tax expenditures does not preempt any effective date that's or any other sunset or lack thereof that's in an underlying bill, and also says that the provisions are not under Section 3.192 are also not subject to judicial review. Section 7 to 9, that relates to the property tax refund program, and that includes the homestead credit refund increase and also the modifications to the additional or targeting property tax refund. Section 12 is the solid waste management tax provision that was heard in committee. The difference between this provision and the bill is that the percentage allocation is only 73%. In the bill, but the increase is still dedicated for SCORE grants. And then sections 13 to 14, these are two taconite production tax related provisions. And the first one just extends the 5 cents per ton distribution for the Iron Range School Consolidation and Cooperatively Operated School account. And also would increase the distribution to that account by 5 cents per ton starting in 2044. And then the second production tax provision increases in 2044 by 5 cents per ton the distribution to the Taconite Environmental Fund. And so, Mr. Chair, I'm going to hand it over then for the rest of this article to one of my colleagues.
Very good. Mr. Culp, or is it Mr. Williams?
I'll be going next, Mr. All right. Chair.
Mr. Thank Culp, you. Very good.
So I'll be covering sections 15 through 25 of this article. Sections 15 through 24 would create a new chapter in state law allowing cities, towns, and counties to create tourism improvement districts. Under the new chapter, a majority of lodging businesses within a defined geographic area could petition their local government for the establishment of a tourism improvement district. And if established, a special service charge on lodging businesses in the district would be allowed to fund increased services to promote tourism in that area. Establishment, modification, and disestablishment of any tourism improvement district would be subject to the approval of local lodging business owners subject to the special service charge. And then Section 25 amends the Workforce and Affordable Homeownership Development Program of the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency. This change would allow MHFA to issue loans in addition to grants. And this section would also establish an MHFA account where the Department of Revenue could transfer proceeds from the mortgage registry tax and the deed tax to fund the program. It would also require MHFA to transfer any repayments of loans issued under the program to that same account to fund future loans and grants under the program. And I believe Mr. Williams is covering the rest of this article.
Very good, thank you, Mr. Culp. Mr. Williams.
Chair Markward and members, section 27 relates to bonds. It exempts from the municipal bond limit for the city of Virginia, bonds sold for a public safety facility. Section 28 and 29 deal with the polar vortex, the high energy costs that were experienced in February of 2021
due to
temperatures. And essentially, there's two parts to that. First, there's language relating to the utilities that would require them to disclose to their customers any additional amounts they were charged due to the high energy costs in February 2021. It would also allow utilities to apply to the Department of Commerce for reimbursement. To the extent that they dipped into their reserves to cover high energy costs during the during February 2021, there'd be a $20 million appropriation to the Department of Commerce to cover those reimbursements. And then Section 29 is the tax credit, and that would be for business and residential customers. It would essentially equal the amount disclosed to them that was additionally charged to them due to the high natural gas costs during the cold weather in 2021. And that would be a refundable tax credit. Section 30, this is a subtraction. Chair Markert mentioned it in his opening remarks today. It relates to COVID business assistance programs provided by the state or local governments in the past couple of years. So it would provide an income tax subtraction to make sure that those grant payments are not subject to state income taxes. And then Section 31 is the County Pandemic Business Aid Program. This is an aid to the counties. Representative Abaje's bill that we heard last week. It would essentially distribute aid payments to the counties, part of which would be used to provide aid to businesses and part of which would be used for housing rental assistance. It would be $75 million total appropriation for the aid, and then $50 million would be used for business assistance and $25 million would be used for rental assistance. Section 32 pertains to this school district in Ely. It would allow the Ely School District to issue $9.5 million in bonds for facilities. Sections 33 and 34 pertain to the free filing report. This is a bill carried by Chair Joachim last year. It was included in the House Omnibus Tax Bill in 2021, but not ultimately enacted into law. So it's the same as the version we heard in the last year, except with updated dates. And that concludes the miscellaneous article, and we stand open to questions, and then I'll wrap it up with the policy and technical stuff.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Williams. Any questions on Article 10? Okay, and I think Articles 11 and 14, we can go through very quickly. We heard the Department Technical and Policy Bill, and Mr. Williams, you're going to verify this, hopefully, that there was only one area that had an area of dispute, and that is Chair Davidson brought up concerns over a provision dealing with tobacco and sales and whatever, and that was taken out. So the rest would all be areas that I heard no disagreement on. But that area was taken out, and I'll let Mr. Williams verify that. So, Mr. Williams.
Chair Markwart and members, that's correct. Articles 11 to 14 are the Department of Revenue's policy and technical bill that we heard in committee earlier this year. These are identical to what we heard in committee, with the exception that sections 3 and 4 from the sales tax article that we heard, those are the sections pertaining to the use tax for tobacco products. Those have been removed, and otherwise the bill is the same as what we heard in committee.
Thank you very much. Any questions on Articles 11 through 14? All right. Thank you very much, staff, for that summary. So we're going to move to Ms. Templin and Ms. Schill now on the spreadsheet. And Ms. Templin, Ms. Schill, are we working off the April 4th, 12:11 p.m. update, or is there a newer one than that?
Mr. Chair, we are working off the 5:28 p.m. version. They're essentially the same, except the 5:28 version is just technically cleaned up in a few areas. And I will be sharing my screen, and hopefully that will be easy for everyone to follow along.
Very good. So we will do that. And I'm thinking maybe Ms. Templin, you'll be starting here. Maybe after kind of each major area, we can stop and see if there's any questions.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to introduce myself, Cynthia Templin, House Fiscal Staff. I just want to verify that you can see the cover page of the spreadsheet.
We can.
Okay.
Yes, thank you.
The spreadsheet is 11 pages, Mr. Chair, and we just will be going over them very briefly. The first, one of the things that we want to accomplish, we won't be going through line by line the cost of every provision. We want to just kind of go over kind of how to read this spreadsheet and where to find provisions in the bill. And to start out, as I mentioned earlier, this page one is the cover page that is a summary, a fiscal summary of the general fund and non-general fund impact of the bill. On lines 1 through 3 here that I'm highlighting, this is just the current law tax revenue and expenditures, property tax expenditures based on the February forecast for taxes and property taxes. Lines 6 through 8, that you see highlighted here in blue, show the changes, the net changes to the general fund in tax policy and property tax expenditures. And my colleague, Ms. Schill, is going to highlight the total net changes to the general fund on line 8.
Mr. Chair and members, Catherine Schill, House Fiscal. Yes, on line 8, we have a net number of general fund change items for fiscal 22-23. It is a negative $1.645 billion. And for fiscal 24-25, it is a negative $1.6 billion as well. You'll see on lines 10 through 19, we have non-general fund change items, and those are kind of minor, but because of all of the other changes, these funds are impacted as well. And you can see at the very bottom, it's under a negative $15 million for fiscal 24-25. Moving to the next spreadsheet is Ms. Templin's area.
Ms. Templin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On page 2 of the pages 2 through 5 of the spreadsheet show all the tax policy provisions and the net changes to the general fund No property tax expenditures are listed on pages 2 through 5. Again, when I go through this spreadsheet, I just want to highlight that positive numbers are on the right side of the spreadsheet are revenue gains, and negative numbers in parentheses are revenue reductions. Very quickly, lines 1 through 7 of the spreadsheet. This is the summary of the overall net changes to the general fund in this spreadsheet. On line 3 of the spreadsheet, you can see the total general fund changes of revenue reduction in the fiscal 22-23 biennium of $1,477,730,000 in the current biennium, and a total general fund revenue reduction of $1,630,020,000 in fiscal 24 and 25. Of that amount, on lines 4 and 5, you can see how much of that total revenue reduction is related to conformity and how much is related to other tax policy changes. And then moving along on the spreadsheet, on lines 11 through 36 of the spreadsheet, you can see on page 2, show federal conformity and the cost to individual income taxes. A couple of things, I don't wanna go through every line up here on this spreadsheet, but a couple of things I just want to mention. The cost do show, they reflect federal conformity, the cost with the special limited adjustment. In addition, provisions that are highlighted, fully retroactive conformity, there are four lines on lines 15, 18, 28, and 31. This shows the cost for full retroactive conformity, that is where the special limited adjustment does not apply. Moving down the spreadsheet, I want to bring your attention to starting on line 37 through line 62 on the next page, shows all the net changes to individual income taxes not related to conformity. And starting on line 38, I'm going to highlight that. That is the cost of the new renter's income tax credit that is replacing the renter's credit. That begins in tax year 21. And you can see the cost there is $372.6 million in fiscal 22 and 23, and $764,300,000 in fiscal 24 and 25. Just for reference on line 39, we show in brackets the savings from the repeal of the renter's property tax credit. That line will be discussed in more detail in the property tax section. And then moving down the spreadsheet, I want to highlight a couple of the bigger provisions on line 46 is the Great Start Child and Dependent Care Credit. I want to note that I do have a correction to the effective date for that provision. It is effective for tax year 22 through 28. And the cost of that provision is a revenue reduction of $196.9 million in fiscal 22 and 23, and $470 million in the tails. The other provision that I want to highlight, it's one of the bigger provisions, is the rebate, the $325 rebate for children under age 17. That has a general fund revenue reduction, an estimated revenue reduction of $308 million in fiscal 22 and 23, with no impact in the tails. And that is a high-level overview of the individual income tax provisions and the net changes. And I will stop there.
Thank you, Ms. Temple. And any questions at this point on the spreadsheet? don't see any questions coming up right now. All right, I think we're good.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll proceed to corporate taxes on page 4 of the spreadsheet. You can see on line 77 through 98 are the federal conformity changes, and they reflect again the cost of conformity with the special limited adjustment. And like in individual income taxes, there are some provisions in federal conformity that allow full retroactive conformity, and the cost of those provisions without the special limited adjustment are reflected on this spreadsheet. Moving on, there are two corporate taxes on the spreadsheets on line 100 through 107. There's the historic rehabilitation tax credit. This has a cost of $31.8 million in fiscal 22 and 23 and $34.3 million in fiscal 24 and 25. This is the provision that allows the credit to be taken in one lump sum and instead of over 5 years, and it extends the sunset date to tax year 30. There is also a subtraction for COVID business assistance also allowed for corporate tax filers on line 102. And I'll stop there, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Templin. Any questions up to that point? All right, I think we're good, Ms. Templin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Moving on to sales taxes. Sales tax provisions on the spreadsheet start on at the bottom of page 4 and go to page 5 on lines 111 to 129. You see the provisions related to the sales tax exemption for construction materials. One of the bigger provisions is the on line 111, and this is the exemption for local governments and nonprofits. Mr. Klayman in the walkthrough described that the exemption for purchases by local governments and nonprofits is limited to an 18-month window from July 1, 2021 to December 31st, 2022, with an additional 6 months allowed for receipts to claim refunds until June 30th, 2023. And the cost is $995.5 million in fiscal 22 and 23, with no cost in the tails. And then lines 112 through 117 on the next page show the cost of the projects with the special exemption. And then lines 118 through 124 show other exemptions that have been modified or extended. One that I want to highlight is the capital equipment expansion to restaurant food service. This has a revenue reduction of $7.7 million in fiscal 22 and 23 and $17.4 million in fiscal 24 and 25. If it's okay, Mr. Chair, I just have a couple more provisions to mention under net tax revenue, and then I'll stop. I accidentally skipped over the state general levy. I should also mention on line 135, under the state general levy, there is a small revenue reduction for the Indian tribe owned property to the state general levy. This has a revenue reduction of $10,000 in fiscal 22 and 23. And then on lines 141 through 148 are other net tax revenue provisions. On line 143 of the spreadsheet is the change to the allocation of tax revenue from the general fund to the environmental fund from 70% to 73%. That has a general fund reduction of $3.1 million in fiscal 22 and 23 and $6.4 million in 24 and 25. And I should also mention on line 144, the budget reserve the budget reserve priorities are changed. And priority number six is modified in the budget reserve priorities to include the repeal or the reduction of selected tax types. There is no cost on the spreadsheet for this provision. Like last year, that is the any repeal or reduction is contingent on the November forecast in November 2022. And we have a preliminary estimate of how much is needed for that reduction to occur in an appendix on page 11 of the spreadsheet. And that's it, Mr. Chair. The totals again are at the top of the are at the beginning of the spreadsheet here on lines 1 through 4. I won't go over them again. And that concludes the tax policy part of the spreadsheet. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much, Ms. Templin. And so we're right on time. I would like to finish at about 2:25 so I can forward members. They have some questions on the process towards the end of the meeting. So Michelle will look for a 2:25. So, thank you.
Got it, Mr. Chair. That's about 7.5 minutes. Members, pages 6 through 9 are the spending side of the spreadsheet. Positive numbers are program expenditures. Negative numbers are cost savings. Lines 1 through 4 is a summary table showing the February forecast on line 2, total changes in this bill presentation on line 3. Those numbers of fiscal 22-23 of the 167.7 million cost is the same as what you saw on the front page. And then the cost reduction in fiscal 24-25 of almost $1 million. Much of what you see in the spreadsheet on these four pages has been reflected already in the division report, but I will tell you it looks a little bit different right now, and that's because we've aligned all of the interactions in the appropriate place for accounting measures in the spreadsheet. So much of this is the same. I will take it in sections, starting on line 7, going through line 35. These are changes to the Homestead Credit State Refund Program. And I will highlight the items that are added new to what was already seen in the division report, which includes line 9 is the expansion of the Homestead I-10 at $3.6 million in fiscal 24-25. Line 21 is the Ely School Bond Debt Service at $60 million in 24-25. Line 23 is the Cooperative Utility Distribution Line PTR impact of $520,000 in 24-25. Moving on to page 6, the other two additions to this are the Solar Generating System Real Property PTR impact, that's negligible, as well as the item Ms. Templin just talked about in the state general levy refund. There's also a negligible impact from the Indian tribe-owned property. Moving on to other parts, lines 36 through 41 are changes to the renter's credit and targeting PTR programs. Line 37 is that line which reflects the sunset of the current renter's credit property tax refund program that Ms. Templin mentioned back on page two. The cost savings from that repeal is $466.3 million in 24 and 25. And then that's the end of the changes to the refund section. I will move to the aids and credits section, which begins on line 42 on page 7 and goes to line 72 on page 8. What you see at the bottom of page 7 was contained in the division report. And so the first several items that we see that were added in the omnibus tax bill, lines 52 through 55. These are the county grants for the career workforce academies, the pandemic business aid, and pandemic rental assistance, lines 52 through 55. Each of these have impacts only in fiscal 23. So when you add together the 40 million, the 50 million, and the 25 million, that's 115 million in additional spending in fiscal 23. Another new item provided is lines 57 through 61. This is the local affordable housing aid program with total spending of $77 million in fiscal 24 and 25. And then the last item that's different is line 69, which is the increase to the PILT valuations. And that total is $19 million in fiscal 24-25. Line 72 has the total change for local aids. Moving on to property tax credit changes, there's one that was already contained within the division report that's on line 75, but some of the other changes along the way impact that slightly on line 78 and 79. And then the last section of this spending side of the spreadsheet is contained within lines 81 through 91. All of these lines are new to the omnibus tax bill. 82 shows the housing development account, fund, the workforce and affordable home ownership account. This is actually an appropriation, not a transfer of earnings from the mortgage deed. The way the language is written, it's an appropriation that is equal to what that calculation would have been. This spreadsheet shows $10 million in fiscal 23, 22-23, and then $20 million in fiscal 24 and 25. Line 83 is the $20 million for the polar vortex rebate to municipal utilities that Mr. Williams mentioned. Lines 84 and 85 are carry forwards from what we had in last year's omnibus tax bill that was not funded. Line 87 is reflected here because this is the legislative auditor admin. Currently in the bill, the appropriation is blank. But in conversation with the auditor's office, there would be no cost. Line 88 is the beginner farmer credit that is also new in this bill at $300,000 for a two-year period. And then finally on line 89, this is the new language that was added to that budget reserve section in 16A. The aid payment ship, I believe, is number 7 that would actually happen in order as funds are available at the time of the November forecast. And the amount there in a preliminary estimate we have, we can share at a later point in time, Mr. Chair. Line 93 is the total general fund changes for aids and credits. And we've already reviewed that. I included this year lines 95 through 101 for a quick reference to each of these sections because there were so many changes. Moving, Mr. Chair, would you want to stop for questions at this time.
Ms. Schill, I think we're good. I think, yes, is there any questions at this point? And no, I think this is perfect timing. Brings us to 225. So, Ms. Tepler,
Mr. Chair, if I could mention one more thing, there are no cost items on that very last page. If anyone has questions, we'd be glad to talk with them about that.
Very, very good. Thank you, Ms. Templin. Thank you, Ms. Schill. So members, you know, as you look through these more, if you have any questions, staff is always gracious, or members to answer questions. So any, thank you very much for the, from staff for presentation of summary and the spreadsheet on the bill. Is there any questions on the process for Wednesday and Thursday? So again, on Wednesday, tomorrow we're gonna hear testimony. On Thursday, we'll mark up the bill, and remember, just try to have amendments at us at a time where we can get them posted. And you can certainly use entire bills rather than having staff have to kind of rewrite them. That is certainly going to be allowed. We'll make it work. And then on Friday, we also will be meeting to hear the education bill at that point. So members, thank you so much for your work today. And with that, we are adjourned.